Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. The COVID-19 virus is turning our institutions for incarceration into petri dishes in which people are being infected and dying. The Multnomah County Commission was briefed on efforts in Multnomah County in Portland, Oregon, to reduce the number of people being processed and to try and get a handle on our prison population. They were briefed on April 14th. We're going to hear a portion of that. First up, Abby Stamp, Executive Director of the Public Safety Coordinating Council for Multnomah County.
So although you have today LPSC, which is really the coordinating body for the entire system, both county and non-county, and the sheriff, as well as Department of Community Justice, parole and probation, and other supervision, I just want to make sure that I illuminate that these presentations are just a slice of the entirety of the criminal justice system. And if there are other questions about practices or policies that relate to the district attorney, the court systems, public defense, law enforcement, as well as victim services, I think we should have a conversation about ensuring that the board members and members or those interested parties get that information answered. But just as a reminder that this is just a slice of the entire system that you have before you today. I have been convening multiple meetings per week with the adult criminal justice system, including all of the system actors I just rattled off, including folks who provide services to victims of crime and substance use disorder treatment. And we meet twice a week, and that has been the case since Friday, March 13th, when we met in the Multnomah County boardroom, scattered throughout the entire space in order to maintain social distancing. And then everybody started to enhance their remote work for their internal agencies. And then we started to have conversations about the Chief Justice's order from the Oregon Supreme Court Justice and what that implementation would look like for Multnomah County specifically, and all of the different systems that come together as the justice system itself. And really what we've done is focus all of our discussions on both the policy, what are the things we need to do, and then the operational challenges, and how do we do it, and how do we make it happen? We have multiple calls per week, at least two, and those will continue really until we have decided that we could start to titrate back. Next slide, please. So some of the highlights from the adult criminal justice systems are these. Really, the Chair Kafori, you mentioned it already. The key discussion is really around jail and our concerns about adults in custody and ensuring that those individuals who really sometimes don't have any choice to appropriately social distance, what we as system players can do to ameliorate that risk in the custody for adults in custody, the folks who work in jail, and of course, the community members who have contact with folks who are coming in and out. And how we do that is two things. One is increase the number of people leaving and decrease the number of people entering. And two examples, which the sheriff and Erica can speak to in a bit, are in terms of the people leaving, really ensuring that the folks who are under the supervision of the Department of Community Justice can be safely released and monitored in the community rather than staying in custody. We've also had multiple discussions for folks who are sentenced individuals who have very few days left remaining on their sentence. How can we get those individuals transitioned into the community and continue their accountability and sentencing in a non-jail setting? And in terms of shutting the front door a little bit, how we've worked has been a beautiful collaboration with the DA, Portland Police, Gresham Police, and the Sheriff's Office to do citation in lieu of booking for the vast majority of misdemeanors. And the exception there is domestic violence or other extreme cases of public safety where booking someone really needs to be the option. And so those folks are getting a citation in the community to return to court at a later date. So the court has been working on, as I mentioned, implementing the Chief Justice's order. Judge Bouchon, our presiding judge, created three different orders for local implementation for criminal system, civil system, and also the juvenile and family law related systems as well. And just very broad general, we are not doing any out of custody hearings at all possible, only for folks who are in custody or in detention. Those hearings will be held, limiting in-person interactions and doing other things like delaying civil trials until a lot later. There's still a lot of questions to be answered there. In terms of the attorneys and those system players, the DA and the public defender are remote working whenever possible, and also focusing their work and adjudicating criminal matters on release hearings. So aggressively pursuing release hearings to safely make decisions about getting adults in custody out into the community and monitored as well. And also working together to adjudicate cases so that plea agreements can be made and cases can be disposed. And lastly, Erica will speak a lot more about probation and parole and post-prison supervision, but doing basically remote working whenever possible and changing policies to comply with all of the county's emergency parameters. And just as another overview, myself and my staff have also been supporting the juvenile justice system. There is a weekly call on Monday around noon to have the same kinds of discussions that the adult side is having. Luckily, the juvenile system is significantly smaller, and the discussions are around continuing to encourage young people to be home and to be safe and to not to be in the community, and monitoring the detention population to ensure it stays as small as possible. And again, the juvenile justice system is housed under DCJ, so Erica can speak to that as well. Lastly, we've been working with Meg Garvin, who's the executive director of the National Crime Victims Law Institute, to have weekly phone calls with advocates and all of the different system actors who provide and support victims of crime for domestic violence, sex abuse, and all other crimes as well, to really identify what are the spaces that we need to have better communication. People in the community and folks who work with crime victims need to know what's open, what's closed, how you get services, and how you manage and navigate through the system. I volunteered the local public safety's website to have a clearinghouse of good, accurate information and to direct people to the different services and supports and agencies they need in order to ensure their own safety as well. That is pending, and we're hoping to get that up online within the next week or two. So the scope of our future work. So in terms of the adult criminal system, which is what our focus is today, I'd like to continue to focus on safely decreasing our jail population, continue our coordination with Department of Corrections as folks also may be leaving prisons, and we're planning for ramp up. So at some point, this too shall pass. What are the policies that we have already implemented that actually we want to keep? What are the things we've learned? What are the things we want to maintain? What are the things that we want to go back to business as usual for? Also, with really preparing for another influx of COVID-19 in the fall. So I think we need to have some conversations about data, a lot of data, what works, what doesn't work, how can we use technology in new ways? As our meetings continue, and the cadence of them has really been managing the fires in front of us. What's the big issue today? But we'll continue to plan and brainstorm for this ramp back up when we get through the backside of this pandemic. And I'd really like to have some hard conversations about what are the things we've been able to do. There's a national discussion about how this pandemic has jumpstarted criminal justice reform in a completely new sense. It is a new universe out there. And what are some of the things that we've done that we think we can hold on to? So that's where that conversation will be headed.
That was Abby Stamp. She's the executive director of the Public Safety Coordinating Council for Multnomah County. She was addressing the Multnomah County Commission on April 14th about efforts to get a handle on COVID-19 within Multnomah County Corrections. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh, your host. Jurisdictions all over the United States have been working on reducing prison populations, reducing jail populations. Rikers Island in New York, there's been an effort to reduce the population in of Rikers Island in New York for many years now. The COVID-19 crisis has lent some urgency to that effort. Recently, Just Leadership USA held a webinar to discuss those efforts. Let's hear from one of the participants. This is Jamani Williams, New York City's public advocate.
All of these issues that we have spoken about, if we had really invested in them, if we had really taken the time to try to fix them, we may not be in such a dire situation as we are right now. And I want to be clear, just recently, just now, the governor put out his most dire prediction yet about what is going to happen to people in New York City and in New York State. And those numbers, frankly, are frightening. We put out some numbers yesterday. I think people have been concerned about putting them out, but we have to. And I say that all to say, if it's a dire situation for all of us who are outside or who have a larger space in the city and the state, what is the situation for people who are in Rikers, people who are in docks across the state? It is literally a petri dish. If you wanted to talk about a place that was the worst place we can create for a viral outbreak, people who are housed and incarcerated, that's it. It's just so disturbing, the slowness in which many of our leaders are acting on behalf of everyone in this city and in this state. And I want to push back on people. Some people have asked, why do I keep lifting up the people who are incarcerated, trying to dehumanize them? This is not a time to play who is worthy of care, who is worthy of being saved. No one that I know of was sentenced to death by viral disease. And so we have to make sure we lift up and continue to humanize everyone. This state arrests people for simple technical violations at twice the rate of the national average. We are among the worst states in doing that. So immediately, there are hundreds of people, like the speaker said, we have a number of slightly over 700, but it's around the same range, that can be released right now. There are over 900 senior citizens who are in Rikers Island. And right now, two-thirds of them are there for technical violations. These are people that we don't even need to think about. Our mayor is moving too slowly. And I also want to add our governor is moving too slowly when it comes across the state. I want us to make sure that we are speaking up for everyone. Very often, we like to say that we are among the most progressive cities and state. We are always far behind when it comes to these things. There are states and cities across the country that have already done this. We are not trying to put the public at more risk. We are simply trying to protect people who are housed in Rikers and in docks across the state, many of them, particularly in Rikers, who may not even be sentenced there awaiting trial, many of them who are there because of simple technical violations, many of them who are sentenced to minimum sentences, which means they weren't great crimes to begin with and probably won't bring any other kind of risk to the public. Lastly, I want people to remember, this is about the people who are housed in these facilities, in the cages. It is also about the people who are working there, the correction officers, the support staff, the people who are going back to their families. What we need now is courageous leadership. It's fine to go up and try to be a calming influence because we definitely need that and let people know what's going on, but we need action. There is a cost, a human toll to inaction. There is a cost and a human toll to waiting. In other places across the world where we see people have acted, the one thing that we hear is we wish we had acted sooner. And so I'm calling on our leaders, on our mayor, on our governor, on our DA, on docs and the corrections to move now. Time is a luxury that we just don't have.
That was Jamani Williams. He's a New York City public advocate. He was speaking on a webinar held by Just Leadership USA on the subject of reducing the number of people being held in custody on Rikers Island in New York City. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's get back now to that Multnomah County Commission briefing. Let's hear from the sheriff of Multnomah County, Sheriff Michael Reese.
I want to report to you and the commissioners that crime overall in Multnomah County is down significantly and calls for police service are also down. However, crime is highly localized. And so what one neighborhood is experiencing may not be true for another neighborhood. And there are certain areas of concern, such as domestic violence, which is either up slightly from last year, or shots fired calls and burglaries to businesses. All of those are starting to trend upward. On the policing side, our deputy sheriffs are on patrol, providing the exemplary service that our community depends on. Our HOPE team is assisting people who are houseless in our neighborhoods, providing food and water to them, as some of the social service providers that used to do outreach have ended their services because of the pandemic. We're also patrolling closed areas in the gorge to ensure that everyone respects the closure. On the correction side, we've worked closely with the courts, the DA, DCJ, and our law enforcement partners to carefully reduce our jail population from 92% of capacity to 62% of capacity today. We've opened up additional housing units to create physical space and lower the number of people in our dormitories. And we've also developed a single cell classification housing unit where people new to the jail system are housed for up to 14 days to allow for medical monitoring and separation from other people in custody. We do enhanced and frequent facility cleaning, and we've taken numerous other steps to protect the health of the adults in custody and our staff.
That was Sheriff Michael Reese. Now let's hear from Michael Seal, MD. Dr. Seal is the Director of Corrections Health in Multnomah County.
So I'll start first with our screening process. We actually started screening for COVID at the end of January when the news first came out that COVID may be an issue in the United States. So since that time, we've been booking for new people newly coming into our system. Initially, it was for travel to China as well as the symptoms of COVID. That's obviously changed over time as the recommendations have changed. And we've also been screening for anyone who had respiratory complaints, screening for travel similarly. So we've been doing that for a couple of months now. Currently, we're screening at two points in the booking process. We screen individuals coming in at the very front of the booking process for fever and symptoms. Each individual is given a mask at that time as well to protect others in the booking area. And we do another screening before they go to housing. So again, our nurses, as they do or their regular screening, specifically look for the signs and symptoms of COVID, exposure to someone with COVID, and we obtain a temperature on everyone coming into the jail system. We've also implemented a daily screening for 14 days for everyone newly incarcerated. So everyone coming into custody will have a temperature and symptom check for 14 days. And then we identified people at higher risk in our facilities, and that would include everything from age over 60, people with underlying medical conditions such as diabetes, COPD, cardiovascular disease, women that are pregnant, those that are immunocompromised who might have a diagnosis of cancer. And they're also screened for temperature and symptoms for the duration. So that's not a time-limited screening. We've been screening them daily for several weeks. Again, the idea being to find people early so we can intervene early and also separate them from the housing population. So I'll switch gears a bit to our other process. One non-COVID focus in the jail setting is always looking for communicable disease, specifically tuberculosis and seasonally the influenza situation. So we have a pretty established respiratory disease outbreak protocol. This was implemented some years ago. It's been refined throughout each outbreak, particularly for influenza. And we were able to take that protocol and modify it to be used with COVID. So one example would just be heightened awareness, so that each encounter we have with an individual in custody is an opportunity to do screening. Heightened regular screening, as I already talked about. We identify then people who are ill through that screening process, and they're removed from the general population. We have two units, one in each adult facility, that have negative airflow capacity. So we have the ability to move people into respiratory isolation. And oftentimes what tends to happen, and unfortunately now we're in the middle of allergy season, we had flu season, regular colds, people can have cough and feel ill for a variety of reasons. And we're fortunate to be able to have a negative airflow situation where we can work that out and make a determination if it's something more serious. And then we also have ability to test in the jail facilities. We have test kits on site, and we send our tests to the Oregon State Public Health Lab. To date, we've tested 3 individuals in custody. They've all been negative. And our criteria for testing is a bit different than in the community. So in the community, tests sent to the Oregon State Public Health Lab are typically for individuals who require admission, inpatient admission to a hospital, so they're quite ill. In our case, we look at individuals who aren't quite that symptomatic. If they're ill enough to go to a hospital, we would send them to a hospital. And so our criteria would be a little broader, particularly exposure to a known case by history, whether they have the appropriate symptoms. We typically rule out influenza with testing that we can obtain in a matter of a few hours. And then we separate, kind of, we have 2 buckets of type of individuals that we would be assessing: those identified at booking and those identified in housing. So for those who are identified at booking, they obviously have no exposure to any housing unit, but they may have had exposure to staff in the arrest and booking process. And obviously they've had exposure to people in the community. We also look at people newly incarcerated in the high-risk groups. And because we're doing daily screening for that group, both for the first 14 days and then ongoing, if you're in a high-risk category, they would also be identified early. For those in housing, it adds an additional issue about exposing others in the housing environment. And that would be both individuals in custody as well as staff. And so in that case, you know, we would do some our own contact tracing to see where individuals were housed and make a determination if we need to do further investigation in the housing unit. We have the ability to place housing units on precautions where we limit movement in and out of the housing unit, and it gives us time to assess each person individually. If we identify additional people who become ill, we can again pull them out into a negative airflow. And in each case, you know, it's individualized. Providers are involved in the decision-making process. We try and rule out less significant illnesses first, of course, and we communicate with communicable disease of the health department to assist us in guidance of testing or management of others in custody. We also are performing employee screening per CDC guidelines for correctional facilities. So each of our employees, before the beginning of their shift, affirms that they have not had symptoms of COVID for 24 hours and that they've not had contact with a known COVID case for 14 days. If individual employees need testing, that's available at their own health providers. And then we also are providing education for adults in custody. Specifically, CDC has information available, and it's been posted in Spanish, Vietnamese, Chinese, and in Russian. And we've developed a PowerPoint to describe our process in English and Spanish, and are working on additional translations at this time. We always have access to medical translators to provide our clinical care, and that's no different for COVID, COVID education, or COVID treatment. And the sheriff already mentioned that there's a heightened cleaning schedule inside the housing units. So hopefully that also helps prevent the spread of disease. So some of the challenges that we found, I think, are not unique to the jail environment. It's really what you're seeing on the news in all healthcare settings. The process has been extremely fluid. Recommendations change daily or more frequently, and it's difficult for us to keep up with that, as it is for anyone in any healthcare system. We also are trying to communicate, but not too much. I'm concerned about crisis or alert fatigue with our staff, with multiple communications that are often contradictory or are changing day to day. So we're trying to be careful in that regard, give enough information to show that we are following trends, we are following recommendations, but hopefully in a way that's digestible for our employees. And then personal protective equipment, obviously, supply is a challenge across the United States, so that's no different for us. We made some efforts early on to develop surge capacity. We looked at all of our non-urgent clinical activities, and just like in the community, we're deferring those wherever it's clinically appropriate. So that gives me both PPE and staff that can perform screening instead of some of those other more routine duties, and we're minimizing the use of PPE to only those activities that are required. We're looking at other alternate ways to deal or to address some issues with adults in custody, particularly to communicate with them. We've been able to use the attorney phone that's in most housing, in all housing modules, so that we can communicate by phone, minimize a face-to-face contact, and minimize movement throughout the facility, which also creates face-to-face contacts. And we also are allowing our employees to telework wherever possible. Our challenge is that all corrections health employees are deemed essential, but wherever possible, we are allowing employees to telework. So I'd like to end on something positive, and we have seen a lot of positives in this process. I think in general, there's been a great spirit of cooperation and flexibility among our staff. I've enjoyed more communication with both DCJ and the Sheriff's Office. We have regular ongoing meetings, and I think it's a very collaborative relationship, which has worked very well for us. And I think most importantly for me, the employees of Corrections Health have really demonstrated dedication to our mission. We have not seen increased absenteeism with our employees, and I'm very appreciative for the professionalism they're showing.
That was Dr. Michael Seal, Director of Multnomah County Corrections Health. He was briefing the Multnomah County Commission on April 14th regarding efforts to get a handle on COVID-19 within the correctional system in Multnomah County. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you have been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like and share it with friends. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!
Regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. Just a soul's intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be.